Welcome to the Theorist Composer Collaboration, a podcast interview series highlighting modern composers and their compositions. My name is Aaron DiZarrilla. I'm the host of this podcast and also a graduate music theory student at Florida State University. Today I'll be talking with the artist Purple Cloud, who, alongside the tracks Southern Swagadocio and Look at Me from his album Hugo, is the featured guest for this episode. I talk with Purple Cloud about his background, the genre of pyrofuzz, his writing and recording process, the album Hugo, the Southern music scene, differences between industry and academia, and much more. So, without further ado, this is Southern Swagadocio, and welcome to the TCC.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of What You Call That. I'm your host, Purple Cloud. With me, I have my co-star, Cool Dude Ross, on the beats. And we about to go ahead and start our instructional seminar right now. It goes. I'm feeling the vibe. I'm doing my thing. But I can't describe. Because nothing has changed. Back to the usual, usual. Back to the usual, usual. Hey, don't you front on my hustle. Don't you front on my hustle. My hustle. I'm feeling the vibe, I'm doing my thing, but I can't describe, cause nothing has changed, back to the usual, usual, back to the usual, usual, ayy, don't you front on my hustle, don't you front on my hustle, that was good, I'm good, that was good, I'm good. No bro had that Southern Swagadocio. That boy good, I'm good. That boy good, I'm good. He ain't no bro had that Southern Swagadocio. That boy good, I'm good. That boy good, I'm good. He ain't no bro had that Southern Swagadocio. That boy good, I'm good. That boy good, I'm good. He ain't no bro got that Southern Swagadocio. Never stressing, my voice a weapon when I'm over beats. My DM blowing up cause they noticed I'm overseas. Had a chick the other day who was telephoning me. I've been on tour for weeks, now she wants me to bust the ovaries. Can I kick it like Dojo faculties? We packing out these shows to full capacity. Face the pit bull tenacity. We Buddha blessing these sacred sessions, chasing out blasphemy. Coming at me like a crowd, you get raw right on the spot, my G. I'm feeling the vibe, I'm doing my thing. But I can't describe, cause nothing has changed. Back to the usual, usual. Back to the usual, usual. Ayy, don't you front on my hustle. Don't you front on my hustle. I'm feeling the vibe, I'm doing my thing. But I can't describe, cause nothing has changed. Back to the usual, usual. Back to the usual, usual. Ayy, don't you front on my hustle. Don't you front on my hustle.
Again, the music that you were just listening to is the song Southern Swagadocio by the artist Purple Cloud, who, alongside his music, is the featured guest for this episode. That leads me to welcome Purple Cloud himself to the program. How are you?
Hello. How you doing, everybody? Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa Hanukkah. All that good stuff.
Yeah. It's that time of year, and I thank you for coming on to the podcast, you know, at this pretty busy time of year for most people, regardless if you celebrate or not. So thank you.
The show is a good time.
Now, Purple Cloud, how about you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, okay. So, hello, my name is Purple Cloud, a.k.a. the Gainesville Grasshopper, a.k.a. Mr. March 16, spitting nothing but sweet 16s. I hail from Gainesville, Florida. My house is based in Williston, Florida. I'm 35 years old. I'll be 36 next year, September 14th. I share a birthday with rapper Nas. So that's pretty cool. I always make sure I plug that in. Yeah, and I love this thing we call music, this dialogue we call music.
Don't we all? Can you talk a bit more about the Gainesville Grasshopper one?
Okay, so one of my friends are like Bushman, like a medicine man, and I went to go visit his shop in Madison, Florida. When I was playing my guitar, a grasshopper was following me and inside the store, all through the his gallery and everything. And Van Jay was like, "Yo, man, I think your spirit animal is a grasshopper." And I was like, "Okay, I can market that." I can market that. Yeah, check this out though. Here's how solidified it is. A couple of months prior, I saw a grasshopper on the hood of my car, and where I grow up in Williston, they grow up really big and thick and juicy. So I took a picture of it for my Cash App and posted it on my Cash App. I'm like, okay. But that was before he said you should make it your spirit animal. And then the third time I went to his shop, they found a little figurine. You won't believe what the figurine was.
I'm guessing a grasshopper.
In the bushes. It was a grasshopper. Same grasshopper that I took a picture of for one of my albums, Drum Major. So, yeah, grasshopper followed me 3 times. I made an album called The Secret Life of Grasshoppers, like a comedy album. Like, I just ran with it, man. It's like I smoke grass and I'm everywhere I want to be. That's why I went with that.
I love it. I love it. I do. Well, all right. I'm sure people got a bit of a taste of it from the introduction that will be heard. But tell us a bit about the style of music, the genre that you find yourself in.
Okay, so the genre that I came up with right after high school, during college, I wanted to call it Pyro Fuzz. And that's the name of my production company, Pyro Fuzz Pro. It basically is about raw emotion and technical experimentation. Like, it doesn't really have to just be hip hop. It doesn't just have to be lo-fi. It doesn't have to be folk music. It's a combination of passions that get the song in existence. It makes the song exist. It's like from the way we record it, from the way we present it to the audience, it's going to be a raw emotion. You're going to feel that. You're not going to get the backing tracks. You know, I might have some pre-recorded stuff on my MPC, but I will switch it up. I am very unpredictable with my live shows. It's like I will build a beat from scratch for a song that you've heard before from another show, but it's like, no, this is how I want to present it this time. So yeah, it's just raw emotion, man. Like fiery energy, you know, fuzzy tones, little bit of hip hop, a little bit of soul, a little bit of jazz, just being able to push the music to its limits.
I like that. I like the idea of Pyro Fuzz. And you know, what is that like when you, so that's where you find yourself in music. What is that like when you sit down to like codify that into an album, you know, like picking which avenue that you go down, which one is like the track?
Well, I start out mainly on my phone. If it's not in my phone, it won't be on the album. Like it's like raw demos are my key ingredient to finishing a lot of these projects, because that's how I started. I used to record on tape players and Walkmans, and now we've got all this technology, these Apple phones that are voice memos and will be notepads available for anything that you need to lay an idea down. So if it's not in my phone, if it's not in that BandLab account, it's not going on the album. I deleted a song this morning, actually.
Oh, gosh.
I was like, that's not going to make it. You're not going to see the light of day. It was a beat that I made called Planets, and I was just like, man, this it sounds a little too perfect. I kind of need something risky. I'm taking more risks this next year. I won't release anything, but I'm definitely going to take more risks with completing albums. So with the idea of making a demo first, you just want to feel out the soul and the skeleton of a song. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you're like collecting a journal, a voice journal, a written journal, whatever experiences are inspiring you to write. I capture that immediately. Thank God for demos, man.
Yeah, that's a pattern that I've seen with a lot of commercial artists I've had onto the program who are not dealing with like sheet music and stuff. It's all, everyone uses memos in some way, which I find fascinating. Yeah. And so, you know, further than Pyro Fuzz, you named some of the more commonly thought of genres as influences, you know, jazz, hip hop, funk, soul. What are some artists that you find inspiration in?
I am deeply inspired by, you ready for this? Mm-hmm. Jimi Hendrix.
All right.
The Wu-Tang Clan.
All right.
And MF Doom.
That's a good trio. That's a really good trio.
Yeah. Yeah, because they didn't give a crap, man. They did not care. They had what they had, and they just ran with it. And I guess that's why I'm still independent. because it's very difficult to afford all the flash that makes a star look like a star, make a star sound like a star. Like, man, I tell you, like when I listen to my old stuff, and this is what a lot of producers say they don't do because they miss out on, you know, finding the new niche, the new genre, the new sound, the new vibe. I say you gotta look back at your old stuff. It's like being an athlete looking at your old plays from back in the day. It's like, man, like when I was really into it, my mistakes were actually more welcome on my pad. Like there were no bad ideas, and that's why the music sounded the way it did compared to now. You know, like it's like when I think about everything that I've done up to this point, from the tape, from the DATs to the audio files now, it really reminds me that, man, if you had to do this all over again, you would, because you love it so much. And no, you didn't learn everything there is to know about how to make it, but thank God for demos, man. I'll keep saying that. That's gonna be a t-shirt one day.
Yeah, thank God for
it's
demos.
Like you saw your way out of the jungle and you made it to the song, and that's why people enjoy the song. And when I hear people say, hey man, I love that song so much, it's like, yeah man, I had to go travel the wilderness to find it, but thank you so much. Like, they never care, but it's I'm glad they like the song.
Yeah, for sure. That's funny. Going to travel the wilderness to find the right demo. So this podcast, Theorist Composer Collaboration, yours is the first of many different genres to find their way onto this podcast, which I'm very excited and happy for. Now, I kind of set this up a little bit in our preliminary conversation, but you know, there's lots of different labels for people who make music. There's composer, there's artist, producer, you know, there can be rapper, there can be guitarist, there, you know, there's so many different things someone can label themselves as. And what do you choose for yourself? And for you, at the end of the day, does it matter? Or what are your thoughts about that?
Well, being that I'm a fan of MF Doom, and you know, one of his many aliases was King Ghidorah, the three-headed dragon.
Yeah.
I say I'm all of the above. I'm a composer, writer, and producer, and an artist, so I guess that's four heads. But I'm a hydra when it comes to this genre of pyro fuzz, because you have to be all those things to get the sound that you want out, you know, the passion that you are trying to convey to a larger audience, because it's going to be you up there performing it. You have to understand that you have to become all these things in order for the message to come across. And there was a time when I was not seen as a producer. There was a time where I wasn't seen as a composer because I didn't do the technical stuff like read music, or I didn't do an electric guitar lead on a song or something like that. So it's like people try to minimalize what is obviously true.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they see you doing the work, but they're so afraid of what that means. Like, oh man, that means you don't need me.
Yeah.
You can really do all this by yourself. You can really wear all these hats, but I need you to need me. So yeah, I'm gonna tell you you're not any of these things. Just so you keep me around. Had a lot of that in the industry, man, and we're still friends to this day. But at the same time, like, I always have war stories about, you know, people telling me what I'm not when I clearly am showing the proof that I am.
It's really hard to get out of pocket sometimes, that either sometimes just by the nature of what you're doing, you might put yourself in, or especially like you're talking about, other people might try to put yourself in a pocket. And I'm sure that's not hard to get out of. So I really loved your answer on that. That's really cool. In many ways, you are all of them. You're a composer. You're writing music. You're producing it. You know, you're clearly an artist. Mm. So, like, you know?
You're performing it, and I wrote it all down. And not only do I write it out, And it comes out in so many different ways. Sometimes I record it straight into the memo, or sometimes I record it straight into my band lab. I still have to transcribe the lyrics before the song is released. So it's like, it's a whole thing. It's a whole alchemy. You have to put your full soul and self into something if you want it to work for you.
Sure. No arguing with that.
But I don't know who transcribes Lil Wayne's lyrics when he doesn't write them down, but like, yeah, it has to be done. Otherwise, the sale is kind of cheapened. People want to know what you're saying. People want to learn your songs. People want to archive your lyrics because your song hit a pressure point that probably resonates with them. So yeah, but yeah, to answer all that, yeah, all of that is important. Sorry.
Yeah, it certainly is. I appreciate that. And so let's get into, you know, we're talking about two tracks in particular, Southern Swagadocio, one that the audience would have heard at the beginning, and then Look at Me, which we'll get to in a little bit. But let's take a step back first. We're going to be talking about these two tracks in specific, but really, these come from your most recent album, Hugo. Can you tell us a bit about that album?
Hugo is, the title comes from a hurricane that happened when I was born on September 14th, 1989, that blew through Gainesville. And I mentioned that storm in my documentary, Mr. March 16. And I thought it would be cool, since I already released the documentary along with the album Drum Major to 4Bits, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do one more album that kind of is like the exclamation point of my releases this year, especially on 4Bits, because it's been an honor to work with, like I said, Mackie Clifford, Jordan Burchell. Like, I've met some really awesome artists along the way since I've, you know, been rocking with Brandon Tell. And it's like, yeah, I wanted to give them something that is personal to me. I feel like with any company that you work with, production company, indie label, whatever, you have to give them something personal so they can sell. You have to give them something archived that will sell not only to people that like your music, but people that want to, you know, get to know you. So Hugo is a very personal project because I'm writing differently. I'm saying all the things that I felt on the rise to, you know, being the Gainesville Grasshopper, being Mr. March 16th, being Purple Cloud as a whole. So, but I didn't want to overdo it. I wanted to be an achievable experience for everybody who is an aspiring artist. So that's why I gave them four original tracks. You know, all of them were basically vibe songs. Like, I didn't write them down at all. I just recorded straight into my band lab and transcribed the ideas, and then went back in the studio and recorded them. And then I said, hey, let's give them the instrumentals too. It's a very personal project, because the beats were made by my friend Derek Ross, who's also a stand-up comedian. So it's like we're hitting them from every angle, being where we're from, but also having many doors to entertainment we can walk through. So for him to be a comedian and a beat maker, and sometimes he raps, like, I wanted to make a project with that kind of energy, because that's where we're headed for the rest of our life. I feel like you're going to have to do more than one thing to stay in the industry versus just get lucky on one track and get there. And your albums have to have many faces and masks. So even though I released those four tracks like on my own independently, I still wanted that to be archived somewhere, because it's so important that, you know, Derek Ross gets his promotion. LL Double D, who's featured on the third song, Let's Connect, on that album. Like, everybody from Chemistry that I've worked with, everybody gets their shine somehow through a personal release. So, and it's going to hit the world like a hurricane. It's gonna hit the world like a hurricane. Once as soon as you press play, bam, that's where it all comes down to. That's what we're trying to do.
Certainly, and you know, Southern Swagadocio certainly hits you like a hurricane when you first start, which I'm excited to put it at the very front of the podcast because it definitely hits you right with the vibes real hard. The two tracks that you wanted to talk about, Southern Swagadocio and Look at Me, why those two in particular?
Because, like I said, like those are vibe tracks, so I didn't really have a thought out plan per se. I was basically being a beat whisperer. Whatever the beat was giving me, I was giving back through a freestyle. So it was improvisational how I did it, but it was very grounded at the same time because there's a delete button. and if I told you how many times I hit that delete button, it was a large quantity of times. For Southern Swagadocio, I wanted that to be the beginning because the opening energy is welcoming. I almost sound like a podcaster myself. I sound like a DJ. I sound like somebody who's like warning the people, like, oh, y'all in for a treat. But Look at Me is also like an invite for not only artists, but people from the South who don't really get the shine that they deserve. And when you think of kings and queens, you don't think of somebody from the South because it had like they don't know what that looks like. They don't know what that looks like until we show them. Until we show them in our own personal manner of what that means. Like, I learned about the importance of trophies. Like, when you see somebody with gold teeth in their mouth, it's not because they're trying to be flashy and cool. It's because for every positive thing they've done for their community, for every positive thing they've done for their friends, family, job, that was a trophy added onto their legacy. So you can say the same thing about grills. For every grill that a rapper got, it's something positive that he did for his community. So it's like, Look at Me is like, yeah, I might look shiny and flashy, but like the things that I did to get here, you'll never know what they are unless you ask me.
That's really interesting. That's really unique. It's probably because you know, well, I'm white and I did not grow up in a black community and I'm not, I mean, I just am, you know, but that's, I never thought about it that way. And I'm really appreciate that you said that. That gives me a lot more of a nuanced look at that sort of thing. And that also connects really well with your two tracks, which anyone listening is going to start to get the vibe of that sort of thing. And you know, you said you were given the beat back what the beat was given to you. So it was mostly improvised, at least at the moment. Then you clean it up. Do you do like one time through, or do you like cut up your verses and choruses, or is it just multiple takes of going?
It was a mixture. It was definitely a mixture. Some songs, it was a clear shot, one shot take. And then other songs, yeah, I did have to take some stuff out, put some stuff in, take some stuff out, put some stuff in. So yeah, like a lot of punch-ins. That's the songwriting that I was using for this album. Like a lot of punch-ins, like, okay, that sounded stupid, I want to re-record that, but I'll leave that part in there. And all on my phone, dude, all on my BandLab app. Shout out to BandLab. If there's any sponsorship involved with that, like, I greatly appreciate it. You guys helped me out to make a banger.
Yeah, I that's really cool that you use BandLab for all that, because that's actually that's the program that we have, or that's the DAW that I have my classes at Florida State, where I teach songwriting. We exclusively use BandLab. They can use Logic or Ableton if they have access to it, but we only use BandLab. I think I might show them your music. Yeah. I might show them your music and say, this was made in BandLab, so there's no excuses.
Exactly. It was made in BandLab. It was made in BandLab first, and then transcribed into the live studio experience. I don't want to leave out that I had Thomas Swanson from the Stew. Shout out to Thomas Swanson. He helped me make it sound glossy and clear and like a hit. But yeah, Van Lab played a huge part in the writing and producing and organizing for that project.
Sure, sure. Now, let's talk a little bit more about Look at Me, which we'll play a bit of it right now. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh yes, I see who I'm supposed to be, because I just don't need no one to dream for me. I'll grind all week until results I see. Now what the fuck you mean? Country boys can't be kings. If you're wondering what it looks like, look at me. If you're wondering what it looks like, look at me. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. So if you're wondering what it looks like, look at me. If you're hearing this, this one is dedicated to the underdog who put in the work to distribute more generational wealth onto the catalog. Talking that 24 hours, then you be wondering who the hell I be rhyming for. This passing gon' be so Jurassic, you'd have thought I was in the lab making dinosaurs. So don't you worry about my gold teeth. Don't you worry about my acres. Don't you worry about my chopping and screwing when I'm getting crunk on these haters. Don't you worry about my overalls. Don't you worry about my tractors. Don't you worry about what it had took for us to be viewed as more than just trappers. And don't you worry about my country dumb. Don't you worry about my southern pride. Don't you worry about my Afro being the true symbolism of my black pride. Don't you worry about my horses. Don't you worry about my hot sauce. Southerner until the day they bury me. That's a big word up to my pow pow. We don't bow pow.
So you were talking about the disregard some people may give you or other artists from the South, or not being given the respect for the efforts and for the contribution to your community that you give. In your, this is kind of jumping forward a little bit, but it all has to do with it. You know, what is your scene like down here? And I mean, Gainesville, I went to University of Florida, but it is in the middle of nowhere, it seems like, sometimes, you know, compared to like if you go to other epicenters of music like Atlanta or even Miami or something like that. It's really different. So what is it like for you?
Gainesville scene is on the verge of breaking stereotypes and showing that success is not a one-size-fits-all mold. It's basically everybody on their stuff, passionate about what they're passionate about, believing in what they believe in, and presenting that to the world through art, not just musical art, but visual art and fashion and food. It's like we're trying to really show that we are more than just Gatorade and football. Like, that's all they know us for. When I go to a show in Jacksonville or Orlando, he's like, "Oh yeah, Tim Tebow's hometown." I'm like, no. Tom Petty, like, keep going. Tom Petty, Bo Diddley, CYNE, Cultivate Your New Experience. Like, give me more. Don't just limit us to a drink and a sport. Even though, like, I thank God we're known for anything, but yeah, we're trying to break that stereotype. We're trying to break that typecast.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's hard for anyone to break out of. Especially, you know, right there, I kind of typecast you myself. I mean, for the most part, I was just a visitor in Gainesville. You know, I was a typical, I mean, I grew up in Florida, but typical visitor in Gainesville, or for 2 years to finish out my bachelor's after my associates. You know, I'm going to go ahead and plug it. You know, your album Hugo is available on streaming and for purchase on Bandcamp right now. You can go ahead and purchase it. You can listen to all the tracks that we've mentioned, talked about today, and a couple others. So the link will be in the description of the episode, regardless of where you're listening to. Go ahead and support Purple Cloud on those. But is there anything else that you want to talk about with the album Hugo, Southern Swagadocio, or Look at Me, anything.
The reasons why I recorded Hugo, originally it was going to be called Southern Swagadocio, just like the introduction of the song or the introduction of the album. But I wanted to call it Hugo because of how it hit me in my spirit when I pressed play and heard those four songs. You know, I'm a fan of the heart. You know, my mom passed of cardiac arrest, so I was just obsessed about the human heartbeat. And you know, there's four chambers to a human heart, and I just saw the need to put out four things that was personal and from my heart that I wanted to present to the world, and then show the instrumental layerings what was being said coming from my heart. And eight in numerology is also the number to build. So from the four original songs to the four instrumentals, that's me building my voice and my face and my world in four bits as a home, making it so personal that, you know, you can't dodge the hurricane. That's the bottom line.
That goes pretty hard, I'm not going to lie. Can't dodge the hurricane. Especially after this past year.
Yeah, we've had three. And I was like, we've had three this year, and we're still here talking music, talking future projects, man. It's amazing. You can learn a lot living in a state like this.
Oh, yeah, you can. A lot of different things. I got to say, Tallahassee feels like a different planet compared to Gainesville or where I'm from, southwestern Florida, you know, by Tampa.
Oh, that's right, huh?
So we're coming to the third section of the podcast here, which I've left extra special time for us to discuss all sorts of different things. But let's start off by, you've already kind of given us a good vibe of this, but I ask everybody this, so I want to ask it to you. You know, when you approach your job here and what you do, creating your art, producing and so on, what does music mean to you?
It's a dialogue. It is a form of communication. It's a way to meditate. It's a way to shake off all the anxieties that this world can throw at you. It's calming for babies. It's calming to animals. It's calming to plants. Like, it's just an overall dialogue. And you get to choose what you say. Like, what you want to be remembered for. Like, all the things that are violent in your life, you can convey that in a musical way. All the things that you find humorous in your life, you can convey that in a musical way. All the things that are even traumatizing, if it's heard in a musical way, people will sit and listen. But when you're just spouting it out in your human voice, it's like, damn, I can't even relate to this guy until you hear the song. There's some people that have stories that could save, maybe not save everybody, but save enough people to where we won't repeat mistakes.
Fair.
You know, that's been a big thing. People repeating mistakes because they want to be seen or have a position of power that they find valuable. But if they just put it in a song or just release, or even something as small as just release the song. Some people have mountains of music that can save lives, but they don't feel like it's the right time, so they just won't release it. I'm guilty of that myself. But in due time, everyone will get the message that they need to continue to not conform and exist in a world where you can unapologetically be yourself.
Yeah, I couldn't put it any better myself. That's good. And, you know, so I want to address, you know, the different spaces that we occupy. You know, you're an independent artist, and I also want to talk about the differences between yourself and a lot of the guests that I have onto this podcast. And I want to get, you know, your opinions on the differences of such. You know, I'm a I'm a music theorist. I just got done applying to multiple PhD programs. I'm a master's student. I teach a college course. Most of the people that I have onto the podcast are at least in some way connected to the academic music setting. Further than genre being different, you know, you're outside of that. And you can be as complimentary or as insulting as possible. You know, it's up to you. You don't have, you know, say what you feel. What's your impression looking at the space that I come from and I, you know, meddle myself with, and composers and theorists and so on? What does that mean much of anything to you? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I should have led with this. I went to Full Sail University and graduated with the music business bachelor's.
Oh, okay.
And what I learned the most from yeah, yeah, thank you. And what I learned the most from that expensive experience is you have to hypnotize yourself to believe you can do this.
Oh,
you have to basically psych yourself up to say, I can go in this meeting and do damage for this artist. Even if the artist is yourself, or if you're representing someone else, you have to hypnotize yourself into believing that the job is going to get done. And when it comes to music theory and academia, those are the tools, but not the limitation of hypnotizing yourself. When you go through the alchemist's journey of learning notes and picking up instruments that make your spirit sing, that's basically psyching you up to show the world, like, I am really this. I am this. I am this. No one can take this away from me. There are many like it, but this one is, it's like what the army say. There are many like it, but this one is mine. Like, they have to psych themselves up before they go to war with anybody. So it's like, it's definitely a tool, a necessary tool, but it is not the end all be all way of how music is created. Cause I remember I had more fun when I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But now that I have a rhythm and I kind of like understand, like, okay, these are the steps to getting there. However, it's kind of becoming repetitive. You know what I mean? That's why I wanted to do more vibe tracks of just, I'm not looking at a pen or paper today. I'm going to record it straight in how I'm feeling. I'm going to be a beat whisperer. I don't even think that's a term. But that's what that's basically what a rapper is. It's like, we talk over beats, but we do it in pocket. We talk in pocket, in the groove, but this is what the beat gave me, so this is what I'm giving to you.
Sure. I cannot tell you how much I love your analogy. And also, I have to say, when my listeners, who are mostly people in college for music, hear the, you have to hypnotize yourself, that is so damn true in many ways. It is so damn true. And so as you said, I didn't realize that you did get a degree in music, music business at Full Sail. What was your rationale? You know, did you go into that degree thinking, I'm here to like acquire skills and then go out from it? Or what made you not stick on an academic track after that?
Originally, I went for recording arts, but then recording arts, I would have to literally be at the studio all the time. And I had just signed to a production company while I was in school. So I was like, darn, this is going to take away from creative time. I want to be able to make songs for these guys, but I'm not going to have any time to be in the studio if I'm already in the studio in class. So I switched my major before the new year to music business because it was online. An online class. And I still, for the life of me, as long as there was Wi-Fi, I was getting my assignments done before shows, after shows, all that stuff. But it definitely opened my mind to, you can really do whatever you want to as long as you're true to your product. Like, there were some lessons that the instructor wouldn't see me at all. And then by the time it was D-Day, like, this is your final project, turn it in or you're going to fail. I went straight into the office and did my presentation because I didn't know, like, how to really work my Apple in such a way where it was like, oh, here's my PowerPoint, here's my lovely audio, here's my... No, I went straight to their office and said, yo, this is what I want to do for my record label, or this is what I want to do for my production company. And they was like, okay, so you didn't... You kind of went the enigma way of doing the assignment, but you did the assignment, so yeah, here's your C+. Thanks.
Oh, sure.
But I had the goal was to give them enough, because like I didn't want to... although I didn't do it exactly how they wanted me to, I didn't want to not do the project the way that I felt was true to my heart. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are ways to get money, but there are also creative and noble ways where you can be proud of yourself when the money's made.
Sure. That, you know, that
after the money's made, you can celebrate harder because you stay true to the product. You fought the fight with what you had, and you still won. I got my degree, so yeah, I'm not tripping.
no, yeah, sure. And
that was the goal.
And you know, that's something that I struggle with as an instructor at Florida State in a songwriting class, which my songwriting course is pretty much like an accelerated theory curriculum with songwriting elements, and then the final project is to produce a single or some kind of song. And it's like,
okay,
it's a weird balance of like, it's a music theory class, but it also needs to be creative, and sometimes it's really hard for me to bridge that gap to like basically say, do whatever you want but also complete these assignments. Like, that's a really hard thing to do when, like, trying to help people develop their voice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to have an individual voice. These contracts are, I was going to say earlier, these contracts in music business are tools. Music theory is a tool. Music theory is a contract. But if you find one small flaw or a loophole, dive at it. Like, when Wu-Tang found out, hey, let's make a deal to where we can sign to whoever we want, but also sign to the label that gave us a shot. We want to stay true. We want to stay true to the label that gave us our shot, but at the same time, make more money and spread our name out into the world by signing to any label that has the dollars.
Yeah.
And that's still being used to this day. Like, MF Doom signed with so many record labels releasing music that he's already released on other record labels. But that's why he's the villain. Jimi Hendrix even signed to 6 different labels, and they're still like, dude, where's our freaking album? He's like, y'all already gave me the advance, so I don't know what you're expecting. This stuff takes time, and I get that you're mad, but like, I can't afford a lawyer, and you already paid me, so just be patient. That's all I can say. But in a sense of when you learn the basics, which is contracts, which is music theory, you are able to break the rules, and that's why that's important to learn the tools, but don't let it consume your creativity.
Sure. And so I really want to talk about now the industry, or the industry that you find yourself in. You know, you're a solo artist. You're in many ways out there fighting the good fight, you know, doing everything yourself. And you know, what is it like? Obviously the answer is it's hard, but what is it like out there for you right now? What are the trends? What are you seeing?
It's like being a teacher. It's like challenging but rewarding. The independence gives you control, but you have to wear so many hats. And if one of those hats are weak or not as honest as the other hats, then it's going to look like all lopsided and no one's going to want to press play or sign the contract. So it's basically a very challenging but rewarding experience. Practice keeps that from being a thing that's out of control and just, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. Like, it turns into, okay, time to finally ask for help.
Yeah.
Like, I will always confide in my coworkers, my even my partner, like, babe, like, how does this sound? New ears helps you not lose control. And but you got to remember, you're yourself too. So even when you hear your feedback, you got to remember that's an opinion. You don't have to go with that either. Take that with a grain of salt. Take that with a shot of sriracha and move on. Like, you don't have to get upset and start burning your instruments. Like, this will never work. Just remember, less is more, and everybody is entitled to their own opinion. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge. But when the work is done, man, we party. We party hard.
Oh, I'm sure. what would it take for you? Obviously, you know, like, the short answer is a good deal, honestly. But like, what would it take for you to want to sign to something?
To if it was treated as a partnership and not ownership.
Okay.
Like, you don't own anything. You don't own my likeness. You don't own my alias. You don't own anything. But you're partnering with me to get these ideas out. You're partnering with me to rock this venue and give them a great experience as to what the world of Purple Cloud is and what it feels like. Like, yeah, I'd rather that than, yeah, we own you until you die. And even if you came back as a zombie, your likeness will still be coming into questioning in the courtroom. Like, oh, you think just because your face is rotting, your tour is done, you still owe us $15,000.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, ask I don't want Mars, that life. Really.
Oh my God, dude. And oh, ask everybody that's already dead. Michael Jackson is still doing tours as a hologram. The Beatles are still doing tours as holograms. Like, dude, leave them alone.
Well, look at Frankie Valli up there, barely being able to, you know, move his mouth to the track.
It's like, this is not the show. This is not the show he would have wanted us to have, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, people try to manipulate contracts in theory and just to make a quick dollar. And it's like, I don't know. It hasn't come to that for me yet. Like, I'm not gonna try to ice skate uphill for nobody, because I know what comes with that. That comes with bad karma, and you can't do what you used to do anymore. Mm-hmm. The universe gives you your art, and then it can easily take it away, and now you have to either build yourself up or let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And so,
like, so many have done.
And so many will do. You know, this big question comes in my mind because, you know, academia, especially music theory academia, any art academia, has a terrible reputation that is very earned to, you know, being like in a watchtower looking down on the other art that's outside of it. And, you know, that's gotten better over the past years. Even
oh, my God.
And, yeah. And, but
no, my sister was calling me and my friend a music snob the other day. I was like, why are we music snobs? Just because we see what's bad and we comment on it?
Yeah.
No. We were terrible. We were terrible when we were younger. We were so mean.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's something that myself, I try to think against, or, you know, work against in my own papers, in my own work, what kind of music I, you know, research and look at. And One thing I really love about the composition and art community, like in solo artist community, is the camaraderie and the ability of a community to, you know, support one another and the genuine love for supporting other artists and so on. In your perspective, how can academics, people in my position, people like me and others who go to conferences and papers and so on, how better can we support, you know, the amazing art from artists like yourself and so many others that are maybe in smaller communities, growing communities, and better support their art and artistry?
There is a term that I learned from watching the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan, and he talks about art being like a light hitting a diamond, and when that diamond illuminates in a cave, you see all the different symbols and shapes that come from that diamond. You have to embrace those shapes like they're all the genres of music. Like, they're all coming from the same source, they're just different shapes. So when it comes to academia, just embrace all the genres and bring platforms for artists who work outside the traditional norms. Like, don't make them feel like, oh, there are mathematicians in the punk scene. Like, you can't really judge a book by its ripped pants and acid wash jeans. Like, you gotta kind of give them the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're talking about in their dialogue. So yeah, just embrace it all. Like, it's all the same message. It's all coming from the same source. And I feel like that's the problem with religion too. You know what I'm saying? Like, because we all have the same message and it's coming from the same source, but there's so many rules to benefit someone else, a mortal person versus the spiritual person. Then it's like, yeah, we're gonna go to war all the time about who's right versus did you get the message? Yeah, music wasn't supposed to be all this crazy stuff, like all these deaths and murders and stuff that's happening around. Like, that was not the point.
Yeah. That's a good comparison. I really love that anecdote about the diamond too. Well, thank you for engaging on that. I really appreciate that. All right, so we're kind of coming to a close here, but as we no, this has been a great conversation. I really enjoy your stories and your insights.
I'm having so much fun. Thank you, man. I just have a big mouth. I like to blabber about this all day, but no, I thank you for listening. Thank you for having this platform for me to share. Like, I'm really digging it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I like to blab my mouth too. That's why I have this. You know, I can't say I don't, but all right. So, you know, you're a productive guy. I think everyone here after listening to this can get that vibe. But what are some projects that are on the horizon for you? What's coming up?
Man, okay, so I have two projects that will not be released next year, but the year after, because for some reason, like I said, 36, you know, paying homage to Wu-Tang's 36 Chambers, to me, that's the number of completion. I'm everything that I said I was from 2017 to now. Like, I'm really coming into the artist that I'm supposed to be, you know, the guy with the jazz hat and in the long gray beard. And when they come into the bar, they're like, "Aren't you Purple Cloud?" And I go, like, "I haven't heard that name in years." No, I'm just playing. No, but 36 is very important, and it's important that I focus more on performances versus releases. So if I do a release, it's going to be through other companies and won't be out of Purple Cloud Records. It'll just be me with education. And yeah, overall live performance, man. If you know where the live shows are and they need an opening at, let me know where it's at so I can burn the stage down along with my counterparts.
Well, you heard it here. You know, I have a lot of, it's no surprise, I come from Florida. I've got a lot of Florida listeners, especially in the middle of the state. You know, hit up Purple Cloud through the links in the description. He's available.
Greatly appreciated. Thank y'all so much, and Happy New Year.
So, what would be your preferred way that everybody reach out to you?
Instagram and YouTube. Check out the videos. Check out the documentary, Mr. March 16. Check out Hugo on Bandcamp. My Instagram is my government name, Rayvon Rollins. That's one word. So at Rayvon Rollins, Rayvon Rollins. Again, that is Rayvon Rollins on Instagram and on YouTube. I am the Gainesville Sun, spelled SON, because I don't want to get sued by the newspaper.
Oh man. Before we go, I always like to give guests an opportunity to just say one more thing or a collection of things. If there's anything else on your mind about music, life, production, your art, others, life, anything, what would that be?
Keep pushing boundaries and don't let anyone box you in. Music is infinite, and so are you.
Beautifully put. Beautifully put. Well, so we got Purple Cloud, the Gainesville Grasshopper, March 16th himself. Thank you very much for coming on to the Theorist Composer Collaboration and for sharing these tracks from Hugo. This was a great conversation. A lot of really clippable moments, I have to say. I'm kind of logging in my head about the ones that I'm going to share. Some really insightful stuff. I really appreciate you having come on
Man,
to this
do what you
episode.
will. You're the artist. You're the composer of this. You're the composer of this. Do what you will.
Yeah,
I hope I
certainly.
wasn't slobbing too much in the camera or anything like
Oh
that.
no,
Because I
not at
love
all.
because
Well, this has been a
I
great.
really enjoyed talking about this stuff.
Well, good. I'm glad, and I'm really thankful to have you on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have a good day.
Because I just don't need no one to dream for me. I'll grind all week until results I see. Now what the fuck you mean? Country boys can't be kings. If you're wondering what it looks like, look at me. If you're wondering what it looks like, look at me. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. So if you're wondering what it looks like, look at me.
This is Aaron again. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Theorist Composer Collaboration. I also want to give another big thank you to Purple Cloud for coming onto the podcast and for sharing some tracks from his album, Hugo. Purple Cloud's contact info is listed in the description, and I would appreciate it if you could show him some support. For further updates and notifications on the Theorist Composer Collaboration, make sure to follow our Instagram and Facebook pages. You can listen to future episodes through our host website, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and YouTube, so make sure you subscribe to the platform of your choosing. If you want to monetarily support the work of the TCC, you can click the link to our Buy Me a Coffee page. All donations are highly appreciated. All the relevant links to follow, listen to, and support the show are in the description. TCC episodes are posted every other week on Mondays, and don't miss our blog posts, which go live a few days after a new episode is added. Again, make sure to follow our social media accounts and relevant streaming platforms because you won't want to miss it. But until then, this is Aaron, and thank you for joining the TCC.